Hi there.
There we go.
Look at this. Owen, I have to tell you real quick that I was really hoping that Lauren and I were going to be in this same shot because we are in literally within probably what, 15 miles of each other right now. But we didn't make it happen. Much farther away from you than the two of us are.
A little bit.
That makes sense. Okay, you guys, welcome. This is hashtag Run Talk Live. And of course, myself and Lauren are here tonight with Owen from. Owen, are you directly from? Can I say United Kingdom? Like, where do I say?
I live in United Kingdom, which is split into obviously England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland. And I live in the southwest of England in a place called Plymouth, where
Awesome.
you guys originated from over there, the pilgrims set sail from.
Love it. I love that. Oh my gosh. This is cool. So what time is it there right now?
It is 12:30.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry that we kept you up this late. I hope
So I got a bit of a nap before
Oh, good.
so it's okay.
Yeah, I almost wish we could have figured out a way to like make it earlier. So I apologize for that. But thank you so much for joining us. This is kind of like one of the things that we have been talking about. Lauren and I have been talking about this forever. We should pop in or also let everybody know that Lindsay's not joining us tonight. She is literally on the road preparing for a 100-mile race this weekend. So we wish her the best of luck and we cannot wait to hear updates and recaps and all of the things which we hope will come soon. But for now,
Weather
this.
cooperates for them as well. It's looking a
Yeah.
little sketchy at the moment.
Weather. Yeah. So. Thank you again for popping in here with us. And of course, we want to dig right in and talk to you literally about running, how you got into this, your amazing, incredible run streak, and all of the things. So, I guess,
Awesome.
that's the first question. How did, like, have you always been a runner? And if not, how did you get into it?
No, I've not always been a runner. When I was growing up, I was a rugby player and a judo player for about 30 years before I retired.
Okay, so I'm gonna be the clueless one maybe. What is that?
Judo is a
Yeah.
martial art, Japanese martial art,
Okay.
Olympic sport, which I did from the age of like 6 until 30 something. But I retired just because I was getting too old and didn't want to get injured. But I got into running because I became severely overweight, massively overweight. I looked like a beach ball. And I happened to get a place in the marathon as a joke. I decided to enter the ballot, which I got a place. And the rest is history, really, on that side of things. That's what started my running journey off. And I've been running ever since.
Okay, that is a really cool story, first of all. You and I have that in common. Like, I've actually, if I'm being honest, have lost, what do we call it? Two blue whales? Two blue whales amount of weight.
You started that.
Yeah, no idea. But anyway, that was kind of a funny little thing, that we've talked about. But that's, ultimately kind of where my background with it was too. So I get that, but like it's become so much more. Has it not? Like, has it, do you feel like that for yourself? Like, obviously you have done some really crazy, amazing things here.
I never forget the reason why I started running in the first place, but my whys have been added to
Yeah.
since, and that's what drives me on doing whatever I do now, whatever you want to call it, be it self-harming or challenging, whatever, whichever way people describe it, madness. That's the thing, it's my whys that drive me, and they still do today. So whenever I'm in a day where I actually don't fancy doing anything, I just go to the fridge, look at my post-it notes, and that's got my whys on, and then I go back out.
So Owen, can you tell us, so after you got that initial surprise that you were selected through the London Marathon lottery, What did your training look like for your first marathon, and how did it go? And then how has your running evolved since then?
So I downloaded a beginner marathon program, which was free on the internet. I mean, there wasn't a lot of information about back in those days. I'm talking 2009. So obviously Facebook had only just sort of started growing. And all we had was dodgy magazines like Runner's World. So I managed to find a free training program, and I literally did couch to marathon, from very little running to 6 days a week. I really stricted my diet, and basically went from there. I was quite obsessive, is probably the best way, as in I had to stick to those 6 days and that plan, because I had no idea what I was doing. And there was no guidance about, really, unless you found a running club, which I had no clue about joining a running club because I wasn't intending to. That advice wasn't out there. So, yeah, it was 6 days a week with one long run a week and one rest day. And, yeah, that was it, really.
But you did the work. And then what was it like crossing the finish line for you? Was it at that moment that you knew you wanted to keep going? Did you take a little break afterward? Like,
so
your running journey?
So the feeling of crossing that first ever finish line of a marathon was something will probably never, ever be repeated. A lot of emotions came out. A lot of belief that I could change my life came out. And then I did the silly thing of listening to Runner's World, and it said take 3 weeks off from when you run a marathon, and I lost all effort to go for a run after that. It took me a while to actually get back into running, probably about 8 months.
Wow.
Before I started running again post marathon. And that's when I went, well, I've done a marathon, what do I do next? And next thing, ultimately, I started seeing things called ultra marathons pop up. And I was like, phew, that sounds good. let's go for one of them. And yeah, so I signed up for my first. So my first marathon was 2010. And the April 2010, then I ran my first ultra marathon in 2012.
Wow. 2012. And what was that distance?
69 miles.
69. So you went from marathon to 69.
Yeah, it was from Carlisle to Newcastle, across basically the north of England from one coast to the other.
Wow. I know you've done some extreme distances. Not that those are not, because they are. But could you elaborate and tell everybody a little bit more about some of your other pretty extreme ultras that you've done, and maybe like the why behind them?
Yeah, so after that first ultra marathon, I spent quite a bit of time away with work. So my running was sort of just in on the background. And then in 2014, whilst at work, in fact, I was on security duty on board ship, and I got a telephone call, which I snuck away to receive from a mate, because I wasn't expecting. We had a falling out, so I wasn't expecting a phone call from him. And he said he'd just been diagnosed with terminal cancer. So that obviously hit me. I was like, oh, you know, what do I do now? So I stuck on board ship for a while, went home, and then I was like, oh, wow. I just wallow in my pity for a bit. So I spent a few weeks getting very drunk. And then I was like, he's feeling like crap every day. What can I do without getting cancer to feel the same as him? So I came up with the notion of running from where he lived now at that point to our childhood home, where we lived together, grew up together. And then I was like, right, so what's he lives in Red Roof, and then there's this iconic finish line called Land's End, right at the very southwesterly tip of England. I was like, well, I'm going to finish there. So I'm going to start from his house and run via the roads, 251 miles, to via his house to say hello to his mum, to Land's End. And then I came up with, as well, I was going to be 37 years old at this point. This is 2015. I was like, well, why don't I do 37 events in 37 for 37 years in that year, as well as this big event? So Paris Marathon, 24-hour races, loads of local 5Ks, 10Ks. They all mounted up, 37 events over the year. Just so I could feel like he did every day. And that was in 2015. He sadly passed away in 2016. So that led on then to, well, he's left two young children. They were only like 4 years old and about 3 or 4 months old. So I was like, right, so he's left two young children now. What can I do for them? So I decided then to run even further. 291 miles from North Wales to South Wales, off-road this time, over the Black Mountains and stuff, via what we, there's a trail called the Offa's Dyke, very historic trail, King Offa, you have to look it up. That's 185 miles, that's not long enough. So I then took another trail, which was an additional mileage of 100 odd miles, which then brought me back onto that original trail, to total 291. But I happened to get a deferred place for a race, really big race over here from the year before. And I was like, oh, how am I going to fit this in? And the run director who I'm very close with was like, oh, why don't you just race it the next day? So that's what I attempted to do. After I finished the 291 miles, I decided to race a 64-mile coastal path race, which didn't go very well because I was already broken. But I got 10 miles into that race and I went, you know what, I think I'll go home now. And that's basically what I did. I DNF'd that race. But I wasn't upset about that because, you know, I've just smashed in 301 miles. So
you've been pushing some like human limits there, I think.
I was quite broken. I was going through a lot of external battering, I suppose, negativity from a local runner, my local running club, who I don't know was jealous or something, and he was starting spreading some vicious lies about me cheating at a race, which I had all the receipts for, so I've never cheated in my life. But just the fact
that
started accusing me during what was the biggest event of my life at this time. So I had that to deal with during that run as well as my mate obviously dying. So there's a lot of things driving me on to prove to others that I'm not this fraud, I'm not this cheat. You know, and my mate's dead, and I'm doing this for his kids now. So,
Owen, do you mind sharing your friend's first name, just so we?
His first name is Phil. He died age 34 from esophageal cancer.
Well, I think what you did in memory, even before he passed, I think that's an amazing thing, especially where you were running for his children as well. So what a wonderful friend you were to Phil, and to honor his legacy the way you have. That's really beautiful.
It was the first one I did in 2015 for him. It was quite nice because I had people join me all the way down, one or two runners here and there as they started to hear the news. And as I got into Cornwall, which is obviously where we grew up as kids, all of our other friends who don't run came out, and some ran 30 odd miles, never run it before in their lives. Some ran 21 miles, never run before in their lives. And it was that Forrest Gump moment of having family, friends, as I cross this iconic finish line down a Land's End. It's something I don't think, unless you've been in that situation, you'll ever experience that feeling. And then went quite crazy after that with obviously newspapers, magazine articles, all that sort of stuff. And I was, you know, I was a local celebrity for a while. I had people literally going, oh, you're that guy that ran all that distance, aren't you? I never met them before in my life, but they recognized me from pictures and stuff like that. So it was really, really surreal in that situation, really. But yeah, there are a couple of the crazy things that I've done along the way.
It's amazing that you chose something like running to honor your friend. And I'll be honest, I have a good friend who she passed away at 39. While I was in the middle of running some of these very first distances, and honestly, just thinking about her and the fact that she would trade places with me at any time was really a driving force, because, you know, it's a similar situation. She had three young kids and she had cancer. She fought for 7 years, and she passed away last December and left three young kids here. And it was like, I kept doing things that I didn't feel like doing because I wanted to say, and I always thought that in my head, you know, like, Chantel would do this if she could trade places with me so that she could do these things to be here for her kids. And like, that was in some respects, I understand that. Like, for me, the distance wasn't what you did. Like, what you've done is absolutely mind-boggling to me, because I, you know, it's incredible. Incredible. And I mean, you know, at some point, you have nothing to prove to anybody, just so we're crystal clear on that. I mean, you could run 5 miles and it'd still be incredible that you did that for in honor of someone else. But, you know, just the fact that you chose that is wild. So like, what does your run life look like today? You know, like what is an average day? Because we know you run a lot. We see it.
2,100, is it day 47 or 48 of your run streak?
It'd be day 2,149 today.
Oh, 49, that's right.
Yeah, we'll be 49 once I go on for a run later on. It's literally, I run on a normal day, I'll run anywhere between half an hour and an hour, normally an hour.
Yeah.
And then one long run of 2 hours to 4 hours a week. Most of those hour runs are easy recovery. With some days, depending on where I'm at with my health, we'll be training for whatever race I'm doing. And I go by time, because it's what you can achieve in the time frame that you've got. Not everyone has got 6 miles available during the day, but they got potentially 10 minutes, 20 minutes. So it's what I can achieve in those 30 minutes or 1 hour that I can fit in my 24 hours a day. And I usually do about 6-ish miles in that hour, be it whether it's training or just going for an easy run. And I think I'm averaging about just under 8 miles a day for the run streak at the moment.
Oh, and I don't know if you can see this, but Drew, he has said, wow, we have quite the exotic guest this evening. And Owen is all right, too.
Yeah, so Drew, Drew is a veteran, a naval veteran from over York side of the pond. And he's one of the first American runners that I've connected with on this app. So I've known Drew for a long time. We have quite a good connection together. Through our naval sort of experiences, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure.
I was thinking it was because of the hair situation.
Well, there is that. We are part of the Bald Eagle Association.
That's okay.
We are one of the four the founding members of that association.
You're also getting a comment that 8 miles a day during a 2,100 plus day run streak is madman stuff. And that's coming from my husband, who is on day 300 of his run streak. So he really, I'm sure he's truly blown away by that.
Hello, how are you?
Gosh, that is the coolest thing. So how do you keep your energy up for this? Because like
8 miles a day is not a light. That's not a light amount of distance.
Sleep. Trying to get as much good sleep as possible. I eat as well as possible as well. I don't restrict what I eat. And I don't get scared of what I eat. One of the things that I, when I lost all my weight training for my first marathon, so I was 20 stone. Don't ask me what that is in kilograms.
No, that's okay.
We use obviously Imperial still over here sometimes. 20 stone in weight, and I went down to 12 stone, which is just under 80 kilograms or something like that.
That's significant, though.
Big drop. I told you, I became obsessed.
Yeah.
So, you know, a treat for me was a tiny little bit of a chocolate bar. And I was probably on around about 1,000 calories a day training for a marathon, which is not good.
No, and for us Americans who use the pounds, I mean, is that metric? You guys, I'm terrible. I know I'm terrible.
We do not use a metric system. We should.
What do we use? What is it called?
A bunch of nonsense.
Rob did the math for us.
Yeah, Rob's done it. 280 pounds to 168.
Oh, okay, cool. Freedom units, that's what we call that?
That's what Jeff said.
Well, good. Thank you for educating me, guys.
I want to commend you, because one thing we talk a lot about on here is the importance of fueling and like staying mentally in it. But one thing I don't think we've touched on is the importance of sleep. So I'm really glad you threw that
sleep out. Sleep is one of the biggest things about recovery. Yeah. And recovery, as you know, is key. If you don't nail your recovery, you're going to get injured. You're not going to succeed in hitting your goals. And it's one of the reasons that I've been injury free from running, and running every day, is because I nail my recovery. I'm very disciplined in my recovery. If I have easy or a recovery run on my plan, that is exactly what I do. Even if I'm feeling really good or really strong, I will stick to that recovery plan. And that goes no different. I've done that from after 36-hour races, 100-mile races. Even if I'm feeling good 2 days after, which sometimes I have done because my recovery is quick now, I will carry on and do my week's worth of recovery runs and then start going, okay, now we can start building back up slowly again.
That in itself is discipline. I mean, obviously, as runners, we all have some, at this current point, some sense of being disciplined, because if not, we wouldn't be continuing to do this regularly. But you know, there's definitely different levels of it. And Owen, like, this is absolutely amazing, because I can't even imagine. And I still consider myself a new runner. Like, I'm a new runner. Like, I'm in awe of this, because I can't even imagine what gets you to a place mentally where you finally are like, you know what, I'm just gonna keep like trucking along, keep going, keep doing this. And like, what do you think, you know, in addition to your friend, in addition to all your things that have happened in life, what is like the driving force that keeps you pushing on this specific, you know, streak? Like, what is it every day? Like, you know, is there any just one thing?
Yeah, running saved my life that day when I crossed the finish line, of the London Marathon back in 2010, that was the light bulb moment that flicked a switch in my head and went, you no longer need to stand on that cliff that I once stood on to throw myself off. Because I got to that place where I was bottom of the barrel, in the darkest, deepest you can imagine. And that was the moment I was like, I don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah.
And since then, running has literally saved me. So even when I have a little bit of a down moment, bit of a sad moment, I know I've got running there that I'll go for a run, I'll feel better afterwards, because I will think about what's happened. I will reflect on my day. I reflect on what's going on in my life. I will make plans. I will all the thoughts that we have when we go for a run, unless you're with someone who's distracting you. If you're solo running, then you know, you think about, oh, I don't know, what should I do for my tea? What am I going to do tomorrow? Where am I going to take the kids tomorrow? Whatever, you do that on your run. So all my, any negativity that I had prior to a run, that goes straight out the door. I reflect on it, and I move on. And at the end of the run, it's basically a new day. So I tick that day off, new day starts, and we go again. And I think once people start learning to reflect better on their runs and their lives because of their running and stuff like that, they may see improvements in their life as well, because it's not just about running. Running is just that little bit of a building block that helps us through our lives day to day. Same with any form of exercise, because of the hormone releases and everything else. And if you use it correctly, it will improve your life, not just physically, but also mentally.
Yes, I love that. How about family life? Like, what's your family life like? And does any of your family, like, do they run with you ever, or?
Oh, yes and no. So my son's 14 now.
Okay.
And when he was very young, he used to love running with daddy. Now, if I can get him out of the door to come for a run, it's a joyful moment. It's one of my best running moments. Nothing will beat that. But they're far and few now because he's got other interests and stuff like that. So yeah, that's running with my family. Doesn't really happen like that anymore. But I make sure my running doesn't affect them, because a lot of people, and that's one of the other mistakes I made in that first initial training for the marathon in London, because I got obsessed, I couldn't change, I need to go for my morning run at this time, it says so in the program. They had to make changes around me. But now my running, if I get an hour to go for a run during work time, I will take it. So when I come home, my time is their time, their time is my time. And they're pretty good, to be honest. When we first started the run streak, it had a few problems, mm-hmm. because I made some mistakes family-wise running, a bit like when I first started with the marathon. But over the 6 odd years, I've learned, and it's now become one family, and the run streak are now one in unison. I'll find out what their plans are first, and then I'll get up at 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, to make it work if needs be. So it doesn't affect them hardly anything.
I think that's amazing that, and also, I don't know about you, but for me, my family sees the need of it being so important to me now, and for my mental health boost, and like it does make me better. And so my husband's kind of like, you need to go, you need to run, you gotta go run, you know. And Lauren, you know, she loads her kids up and she gets them in this double stroller. She's out there
trucking. I remember those days.
My son did do a 5K with me, and he said, I don't love running, but I know it made you happy. And I was just like, he's not wrong. That's exactly, so, I mean, I totally get that. Like, it's just that's awesome. I mean, that's such a fun thing. And like getting your kids to be able to take time from their own lives to hang out with you is in itself a joy, but then to do something that you love is even better. So.
Yeah. I mean, we're still trying to find something active that we can do together, that we can love together. We've tried all sorts at the moment, but as it stands, he did mention about doing the Marathon des Sables with me once. If you don't know what the Marathon des Sables is, it's a 7-day ultra marathon across the Moroccan Sahara Desert. It is iconic, quite an expensive event, but he mentioned that a few years ago. I don't think he's still keen now. But we'll see. When he gets 16, he can do it. So I might try and tempt him.
So, Owen, do you have any big race plans for any ultras or other races the rest of the year?
Currently, I have Hope 36, which is a 36-hour race. Because, as you know, Lauren, I like running around getting dizzy for 36 hours nonstop. And then I've got Glasgow to Edinburgh later on in the year, with an ultra marathon between the two Scottish cities up in Scotland. So that's all I've got planned at the moment. And we'll see how the rest of the year fills out. I had a year off from racing back in 23. Not through choice, most of it. Most of it, half the year I spent away deployed. And the races that were on when I hit half the countries I visited didn't fit in when we came alongside. So I just didn't get a race. And then when I got back, I just couldn't be bothered for the rest of the year. And that was quite eye-opening, not racing for a year, not having to spend money, not having to worry about training if I didn't hit my training. I didn't have to worry about dragging my family across half the country, or them crewing me, you know, didn't have any of that. And it was actually quite nice for a year. And then I got back into racing again last year.
Well, if you ever end up changing your mind and have the opportunity to come over to the States, you have there's a whole crew of TikTok friends that would love to meet you in person.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, last time I ran in the States was 2019. I ran in New York, Florida. That was it that year. Yeah, New York and Florida.
Sounds like you need a trip to the Midwest.
Well, I have been to, not the Midwest. I've done the East Coast and the West Coast and Hawaii. Done those sides. I haven't done the middle yet, so who knows?
Do you think we could convince him? He's been to Hawaii. Like, really? We're going to convince him that this is...
Hey, the people make up for the lack of views. We don't have mountains, but we have really cool people.
Yeah, as long as you got some good trails there. I don't do this road running stuff. That's, you know.
We have some good trails.
I'm waiting to see them. I watch your videos and all you do is road.
I was on the trails a couple days ago.
Yeah, I do road if I have to. I try and keep away from it.
Lauren can find some dirt if she needs to.
Dirt and mountains. That's what we want.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Can you tell us a little bit? So, as you're running, like, let's say the 291 mile race for your friend, as you're running, did you ever have moments of doubt where you're like, I don't know if I can do this? Or, like, what were some mantras you used to keep going? And did you ever have moments of doubt?
Yeah, every mile. Every mile. Yeah. Literally. Every mile. And when I got lost, and I had no phone signal because I was deep in the valley of a mountain, no phone signal, got lost. The tracker I had on me wasn't updating. And I was at that point, I was like, do you know what? What am I doing? Questioning my life choices here. But then I literally turned around and went, your mate's dead. Stop moaning. Get on, you know, it could be worse. I can run, he can't anymore. So whenever I question my life choices and stuff, he seems to be on my shoulder at every turn, every doubtful moment. And he's the one that gets me across the finish line. And I think all the times I've had DNFs is when he hasn't been on my shoulder. For whatever reason, he didn't answer my call. So I generally think he's looking out, and I think we've all got someone looking out for us when we go for a run. It's just whether you can actually tap into them to get them to get you going. Even in the now with the 24 hour races, 36 hour races, I question my life choices as I'm running around. But then I just pull up my big boy pants and keep moving, keep smiling. I need to tick off that distance. And those miles keep going, whether they're slower or whether they're quicker. Aim for the next sunrise, because you get a second wind when that sunrise comes up. It's amazing what the sun up does after a long night and running through the night. And you just get going again, you know?
That's such a powerful perspective, because I think, especially when you're doing a longer distance run, whether it be a half marathon, marathon, or ultra, there is such a mental piece involved with convincing yourself to keep going or keep pushing when you're hurting. And you clearly have like next level mental toughness to be able to push through. So I think it's nice to hear from the best of the best that even you have your really tough moments where, you know what, sometimes you just, like you said, you may slow down, you may need that next sunrise, but like you just need to keep fighting. And that's such a like good takeaway for any runner at any level of their running journey.
You gotta, your body's more capable of doing stuff than what your head thinks it can do. And a lot of people's DNFs is because they let their head win. So little niggles and stuff like that, a lot of the time, isn't that bad. And you can actually finish, but you allow your head to go, oh, my knee's hurting, I can't go on any further. And my first DNF was exactly that moment. My feet, the bottom of my feet were so tender, well, that's what they felt like. It felt like I could feel every stone I was stepping on and I couldn't cope anymore. And then if you sit after your race, if you sit and reflect on that race and go, what went well? What went wrong? Why did it go wrong? I can guarantee the most of the times your DNFs are caused when you think you're injured and you're actually not. It's just your body going, okay, not you're quite used to this. It hurts a little bit. But your head's going, you've got to stop. You've got to stop. But your body can go on a lot further without doing serious damage if you just tell your head to shut up and get moving. And that's the hard bit, is telling your head to shut up and let your body do what it's designed to do. And you'd be surprised what our bodies are capable of. And if you look at some of the most recent, really long distance races, the females have greater pain thresholds. Mm-hmm. Like there is a recent race over in the America called the Speed Project. Good friend of mine, Holly, she won it. She went over and won it. That's from LA to Las Vegas, 300 miles. The first and second overall place were female, 35 minutes ahead of the male, because women have better control over pain. Mm-hmm. Over pain.
And
you can control your head better, you know, you're used to it, you can get through it. A lot of men aren't as good at with pain in comparison. So that's why when we get over big races, big distances, Jasmine Paris winning the spine the year she won it overall, smashing the record. If you don't know who Jasmine Paris is, she's the only female Barclay Marathon finisher. Yep. She was just down our way on where I live the other day, actually running. Our bodies can do all these great things. Women can be slightly better the further we go at telling our bodies we can do things. And as for men, we need to actually just pull up our pants a little bit and get on with it.
Tell me like it is.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's true.
First,
you know,
I haven't talked to you all day.
I'm quite lucky. I've built up a lot of good friendships over the years with elite runners and stuff from over here, and some from over there. John Kelly, as an example, and the stuff that we as humans can do, whether it's be the fastest person to run 874 miles from Land's End to John O'Groats, from South of England to the top of Scotland in 9 days, 874 miles in 9 days non-stop, you know, or whether it's the Barclay Marathons within the 60 hours, or whether it's the first female to finish the Barclay Marathons. Humans can do these great things, but we don't allow it. It's our heads that don't allow it. You, Lauren, could do your 100 mile. You are stopping yourself from entering that 100 mile. You can finish it. You, Jennifer, go for, if you want to. You don't have to do these things, but your body could do it if you allow it to do it.
It's really funny because I have just kind of been tapping into a little bit of what we're talking about right now. Like I feel like last year was kind of my year to figure out a little bit of like, what am I doing and what, and like this year I can feel myself, you know, I'll have certain moments of like my brain saying to me, stop, it's uncomfortable, stop. And I'm actually figuring out now how to like quiet that, which is kind of a cool thing to me because I've noticed such a huge improvement just in like, I took not necessarily a full-fledged break, but I kind of tapered down in mileage. And now I've been tapering back up and I'm like really making some serious progress. And it's like, it's because I've been doing that. Like I've been telling myself like, hey, that doesn't hurt the way you think it does. And you can push through it. And like literally just saying to my head, not necessarily shut up, but just like, hey, we don't think that way. Don't think that way. And it's really made a huge difference. Yeah. Like it's crazy. Cause I haven't ever really tapped into that before. I've always been very negative in my headspace and I have just totally shifted that. And it's insane. The physical difference that it's making.
So is it something I actually learned at work? Recently we started learning at work. Just yesterday, in fact, and it's about picturing that image in your head. Mm-hmm. Okay. So much so that, for instance, if you were to picture an apple, you close your eyes, you can imagine an apple, you know what color it is, what it tastes like, all that sort of stuff. And it's the same, actually, talking about it, you can do that with finish lines. What that feeling is going to be like when you cross that, and when you're running and you're starting to struggle, just picture what it'll be like to finish across that line, you know, compared to stopping right now. Yeah. What would that be like? If you stop right now compared to finishing, what would that be like? So you can imagine that picture in your head, the scene, crowd, all that around the finish line, children running up to you. Oh, mommy, daddy, well done. All that sort of stuff. Compared to you feeling like absolute crap. For the rest of the day, because you didn't finish, and you wake up the next day, and actually your leg feels pretty good. Oh, damn it! I should have finished. You know what I mean?
That's such a perfect way of putting it. Visualize the success.
Yeah, visualize that success. It's all in the heads. It really is all in the heads. Running is easy. It's 95% mental, 5% moving your feet.
For sure.
I mean, and you're proof of that. I mean, you're literally doing things that most people can't even imagine. Like the fact 291 miles, like a lot of people are like, I'm not even going to do that in a car, you know? And you're on 2 feet, just plugging away through that and pushing through it. And it's like, yeah, your mental capacity to be able to overcome the most difficult things is absolutely amazing. So that, I mean, that's such an honor for us to be able to hear that perspective, because like for me, I am just tapping into that, like, and scratching the surface, you know. I am just like making the small changes on like my headspace and finally seeing like, hey, that's how you're gonna show yourself more capability. Like you're pushing more into what you already didn't think you could do. Now you're doing what you didn't think you could do even better. And it's like, that part of it to me has been really great. And so hearing this from you kind of like helps kind of boost me a little bit more to think like, hey, you can keep going, you know?
I mean, the most important thing, and I'll always say it, and I've said it so many times on my videos and stuff like that, is running, any form of exercise, but anything we do in life should be enjoyable first and foremost. And if it's not, you're doing something wrong. And that doesn't matter, it's running, going to the gym, you know, going for a walk, having sex. If it's not enjoyable, you're doing it wrong. Find out why it's not enjoyable.
Yeah.
Sort it out. Fix that problem. Why is it not enjoyable? Is it because you're running the same route every day? Is it because you're not mixing it up? You know, go to the beach if you've got a beach near and go for a beach run. Go onto the trails, go on, hit those mountains, even if it's for a short distance. Is it because you're doing the same training every single day? Is it because you're running hard every day, not having those easy runs? Find out why it's not enjoyable anymore. Running should always be enjoyable. When people say they hate running, it's because they're doing it wrong.
Right.
If they hate going to the gym, they're doing it wrong. It should be enjoyable. Stop. Take those pictures. Make those videos. Get them out there. Don't do it for anyone else. Do it for yourself. Use that as your accountability and make it fun. Don't be scared to have a dance or a sing along the way.
I'm scared of dancing. I am.
That's fine.
He's good at it too. She needs to just do it.
It's fine. You don't have to video the dancing. You don't have to video the singing or, you know, your conversations. But don't be scared of having fun. A lot of people think, oh, I've got to do, like I did my first marathon training, as per the plan. Mm-hmm. No, you don't have to. It's got to be fun. Make sure you warm up properly. That could be just going for a run. That's what I do. Going for a run, do your training. All right. And then warm down. That's when you do your content. That's when you have a little dance. That's when you do your little spiel. Concentrate on your training. Don't worry about filming the training, because that's what you should be concentrating on in training. Yeah. Do it for the warm-ups. Do it for the warm downs. Then you've got your content. All right. You've got your memories. You've got your accountability. And you've had some fun along the way.
That's right.
Then grab a friend. That's good. Grab a friend if you don't like running. It doesn't matter. Grab a dog, you know. It's mixing all your runs up, making sure it's different. I have not run a single run on my run streak exactly the same. Every run has been different. Even if it looks like I've done the same route on my videos, something is different in that video. That could be the weather's different, the top I'm wearing is different, a new pair of sunglasses, new hat, you know, different time of the day. There's an aspect of that run that is different. Even if I take a slightly different detour, that road that I've never run down before, just to see what's down there, come back, that run is now different. And that's what it's all about, is making sure you enjoy your running, having fun, and then the success will come in the training as you go along.
Leah had a really good comment. She said, when I get into the pain cave, I pivot and say, okay, here's a new norm, but I can keep going. And I think that that's a really good, that's kind of a similar viewpoint, but it's essentially accepting it and telling your brain, like, it's okay, we're going to keep going. So thank
you. It's supposed ultra marathon, running long distances is supposed to hurt.
Yeah.
They're supposed to hurt.
You'll have discomfort, yeah.
Your body's not used to it. It's going to hurt, but it's how you cope with that pain is where the difference between finishing and not finishing.
Yeah, like push through the uncomfortable. Like that's uncomfortable is where you find the good stuff. Like I've learned
that's why they say ultramarathon running is like self harm, but with benefits. You know, you are purposely hurting yourself, but there's benefits to it. There's benefits to it.
Yeah.
Unlike standard self harming. So, and most of us ultra runners that do this, it's because we've got stories to tell. There's not many out there that don't have a story in some form, especially the ultra running world. There's a reason why we started running in the first place, and you'd be surprised. There's lots of big elites that have either had drug problems, they've had alcohol problems, depression, mental health issues, all that sort of stuff. And that's what's driven them to running ultra marathons. It's a release for a lot of people. So yeah, you know, it's getting through that pain barrier, and goodness will come from it at the other end.
Yeah. Owen, can you tell us, I know earlier we kind of touched on food, but like when you're out running, when you're running the way you're running, what are your go-tos for fuel? And like, if you're doing a long run, how does that look for you? And then on race day, how does that look for you?
Okay. So obviously depending on how long the race is will depend on what I'm going to be eating. I don't do gels anymore. I haven't touched gels since 2014.
Okay.
Probably the last time I touched a gel. I mostly supplement my food with Tailwind Nutrition, and I have done since 2015. And I'm very lucky that they now support me and have done since 2016, which is quite nice.
Tailwind is so...
I have done a full 24-hour race just on that, just on Tailwind alone.
Wow.
But again, I learned from that. Because when I started doing longer distances, my appetite would disappear. Mm-hmm. I couldn't eat at all, even after the race, for quite a while. So when I started having Tailwind, it stopped me suppressing my appetite for the distance. I was able to eat. And now, so training, if I'm just running for an hour, I won't pretty much fuel properly before it. I'll just go in whatever my fuel tank in my belly's already got. Our bodies can survive an hour on what you've already got inside you. Long distance runs, I will take pork pies, crisps, pretzels, some salty stuff. And then on race day, depending on how long races, I will have pizza, I'll have burgers, I'll have chili, whatever's on the menu at the checkpoints. I don't do sweets from the checkpoints, mainly because people put their hands in and they've probably gone for a week behind a tree or something, you know what I mean? So pot noodles, what other stuff is there? Watermelon, love watermelon, especially on a hot day. Slice of watermelon is amazing, hydrates you. I'll have a can of Guinness during the race as well, replaces the iron, and it's just something nice to drink. Having a pint.
You know what's really funny? You say all of these things, and I'm like, when you say crisps, I know that's like a potato chip here. Rice pudding would be just like regular, regular pudding with rice. I mean, is that like a...
Yeah, truly.
Yeah, so rice pudding is a dessert that you can get over here, okay. Normally warmed up. But we have a company called Müller, not sponsored by them at all. They do yogurts and various other desserts and rice puddings. They do a nice little pot of rice pudding, which you can eat cold. And they can do either plain or it has strawberry in it or apple or something like that. And it has the carbs that you need.
Yeah.
And it's easy when you're struggling to digest stuff to go down the back of your throat. Just whack it down. And, you know, you have to start your races fueled prior to starting. A lot of people don't start until after they've already started running. You need 60 grams of carbs at roughly an hour. And when you're doing, if you're doing short distance races like 10Ks, half marathons, you don't, depending on how long you're going to be out there, you don't really need to fuel like that.
Yeah. No.
As soon as you start progressing to the marathon and further, your fueling needs to start as soon as you wake up. You need to start getting, and people get it very, very wrong, which is why they hit the wall, they bunk out pretty quickly. And it doesn't have to be gels. People need to get out of their heads, gels, gels, gels. That's why you end up shitting yourself, you know, too much gels. And I've had bad experiences of that without taking gels. You do not want to do that on the run.
Oh, no.
It's not a pleasant situation. I can tell you that, especially if you're out in a foreign country and it's hot. And there's no toilets about. you need to fuel yourself as soon as you get up. You don't need a carb load with a massive bowl of pasta before a race. Your body can only absorb
the night before.
Your body can only absorb so much. It can only absorb so much. You're wasting the rest of the bowl of pasta for no reason. It can only absorb so much. So just eat normally. Mm-hmm. Eat normally. And
your
then
glycogen will not increase because of simply one meal the night before.
Exactly.
Right. That's such a common thing that runners do before.
You see it. You see them posting a picture of them before the marathon, oh, is there a giant bowl of pasta and carb loading? They've put, and it's like, that's not carb loading, that's just waste.
Yeah. You know?
So fuel properly, and that's half the battle of your race already done.
Owen, Mary Grace is in the chat, and she is very concerned about the chili and the shitting situation.
Chili. During a mega race, especially in at night when you when it's freezing cold and you just got into the checkpoint, the aid station, and they go, oh, here's the menu, what do you want? And they go, oh, I'll have the chili, please. Or they come out with scones and jam and cream. Yeah, I'll have a scone with jam. Scone is like your, they look a bit like your biscuits you get with your chicken over there. We call them scones. You have jam and cream on it. You whack them in. Oh, this is a mental, it's delight in the middle of the night.
So you have scones and jam and cream with chili?
No, that's separate.
Oh, so I was like all excited because in Iowa, we have chili with cinnamon rolls. And people think that we're nuts, but it's like the best thing ever.
So jam, scones, and cream is a very controversial thing on here. Which way do you put the jam on first or the cream on first? Depends whether you live in Cornwall, where I got raised, or whether you live in Devon, where I live now.
Oh, no.
It depends on whether you put the jam on first or the cream on first. It's very, it could cause civil war if you get it wrong. It's very controversial.
How do you do it?
So it's a dessert in a way. Afternoon tea. We have afternoon tea, sandwiches, cakes.
If we come visit you, how are we supposed to do it? Do we put the jam or the cream first?
I will always tell you to do it the Cornish way is the better way. Jam first and the cream on.
He said it so quietly so no one could hear.
So it's not essential. One other question. Mary Grace is wondering what's in your chili, or like traditionally what's in the chili over there, because she said maybe American chili is.
Yeah, I mean, it's more than likely probably different to what you guys have over there, but our traditional chili is normally a mince, beef mince meat, with kidney beans, onions, peppers, mushrooms, chili con carne sauce. Most people don't make it from scratch over here. It's normally out of a jar, pre-made,
chucked in
type thing. And then they'll have it either with rice on the side, or I like to just have a bowl of it with a bread to dunk in.
Yeah. It doesn't sound too far from what we have. I mean, we do, like I make mine more, I make mine from scratch. I do like the tomato juice and then I actually pour, this is gonna sound funny, I pour a jar of salsa into our chili. And then we use like beef and a little bit of sausage, onions, tomatoes, but I mean, sounds similar. Like
I like to use diced beef now instead of minced beef, slow cook, so it's nice and tender, falls apart in your mouth, more than the minced beef. But the traditional way over here is minced, it's minced beef.
Look at you. Mary Grace just uses a can. Oh, man. We're going to have a chili cook-off, you guys. We're going to have to have Owen get here to Iowa and then have the chili cook-off.
As long as I'm good from a run, I don't care what I do.
Yeah,
Owen, you should select a race and you should try to organize a Run Talk meetup for us to come join you. Maybe in 2026, though, so everyone has time to plan.
Oh, I've got some beauties in mind if you want to come over. as long as you like the countryside, you'd be loving it. And probably the rain.
I'm not saying I'll run the whole thing, but I definitely would. If that's a trip we're taking, that's going to be on the plan. Like, if my husband's still in the chat, like, let's talk about this when we're not on here, so I make sure I can clear it with him first.
I'll clean if you cook. Yeah, I'll cook. I'm happy to cook. I'll do most of the cooking.
Oh, I love it. Oh my gosh. Hey, before we let you go, because we know that it's late there, will you just share with us, you've already given us great advice, but we do like to ask this question.
Yeah.
What's the best piece of running advice you've ever gotten?
Don't be shit. Literally, that I got told that right at the start of my 2015 adventure, that 251 miles, a good mate of mine, he was a firefighter, he's now retired. He turned around to me and he went, just don't be shit. And that was in my head for the rest. So whenever I felt really like crap and couldn't go on, I had it written on my hand, don't be shit. And all the races after that, I had don't be shit. And I just look at that I can't be shit. I cannot be shit. And that was it.
We need water bottle stickers that say that.
Say again?
We need water bottle stickers that say that.
Yeah. Run top, don't be shit.
Yep, that's it. T-shirt idea, Sarah says. Yeah.
Hey, that'd be pretty cute on a hat, too.
Yeah, get it on there. Don't be shit. Oh, Lauren, I know you like your hats. I got a spare one of these, but in black. Would you like it? I can send it out to you.
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know you like your hats.
Oh, yes, yeah, she does. She would.
I love
she would.
That.
Yeah.
Send me your address, and I'll send it out to you.
I love
it.
All right, we'll chat.
Well, all right, Owen, we know it's late your time and we don't want to keep you up any longer, but this has literally been, I mean, every week I say this, I'm like, this has been one of the best ones, but I mean, I just feel like we keep getting better and then we keep picking better, more like, you know, like just everybody in the space is so phenomenal. I don't want to say that one person's better than the other because I feel like we're all equally amazing. I just feel like every time we do this, I feel so inspired. I feel like this is just great for me, for my heart. And I know that Lauren and Lindsay both feel the same way. And we could not thank you enough for being awake and doing this with us and, you know, taking time out of your life to do this. It's just, it's such a great thing. And
You're the first American to be in a sports bar right now as well.
Oh my gosh, that's so awesome.
Yeah, so there you go.
That is a sweet space. That is a very sweet space.
Well, it started off, in my first house, when I started running, I had a little corner of the house because that's all the space. So the few medals went up in the corner, and then over the years, as we've moved and stuff, we've now progressed into a big sports bar.
Yeah. I love it. And look at all the medals in the background. That is such a sweet setup. Oh my God.
And they're all my special bibs. So oh, wow. I got loads, but I only keep the special ones nowadays. The ones that mean the best.
You could make all the wallpaper of the bibs. You really could.
You might need to clear your basement.
I'm giving you ideas. Sorry, Rob.
I have a lot too. I want to share one thing Ashley just said, Owen. She said, I so appreciate your kindness and honest inspo that you share. And I think all of Run Talk would agree. You are such a positive, honest, and just all around inspiring presence. So
I owe the running community so much. It saved my life. So
well, I give back
to the running community. Love especially it. Advice, info I never had when I started. And if I can help one person start running, improve their running, enjoy their running, then we all win.
Well, you continue to give back time and time again. More than you know.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I'm at a loss for words, which very rarely happens. And Lauren can attest to that. I very rarely am at a loss for words, but seriously, this was so great. And you guys, this episode, as soon as producer Rob, who, you know, AKA Lauren's husband, helps us out with getting this uploaded, this will be available on where you get your podcast on Spotify and Amazon Podcast. And also will drop on YouTube. Not this week, but next, when we are back with another Run Talk S.
Excellent. Love you. Bye.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much, Owen. Oh, this was so great.